You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, Helions, hellbent on hallucinating about hellacious Halloween hallmarks. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 241, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your spoofers, spoon-feeding spookiness.
I'm Colin.
And I'm Chris.
We got our Halloween special today, but before that, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. Here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card. Sorry, not Halloween theme. Yeah. You guys have your non-Halloween barnyard buzzers. Here we go. Let's answer some questions. Blue Edge for geography. Ooh, which of the five Great Lakes does not have a border with Canada?
Oh gosh. Okay. All right. Does not.
Do you All each right. want to say one?
Okay. I don't think it's Ontario.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can rule out. Yeah, let's look. Okay. So don't think it's Ontario. We should know a mnemonic for all these, right? There's Ontario, Holmes. Superior. Oh, yeah. That's right. Holmes, right. Superior, yeah. Huron,
Michigan, Erie.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So does not, I'm going to say.
So they all do except for one.
All do except maybe.
How about Erie?
I was going to say either Erie or Michigan. So yeah, I could go with Erie.
The answer is Michigan.
Michigan. Okay.
Sorry to all of our.
So the Michigan. One that is named after a U.S. state.
State.
Is the one that does not even touch Canada. Would refuses to even touch it.
Okay. Does not deign to.
Right.
All right. Pink Wedge for pop culture. Which self-proclaimed best friend of Nicole Brown Simpson wrote her posthumous tell-all and appeared on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills?
Oh my gosh.
Wow, what a snapshot of
real. Okay, so Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Self-proclaimed best friend of Nicole Brown Simpson.
Who was on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? Bethany Frankel.
No, she's in, that's New York.
She's in New York. Vanderpump.
Not her.
It wasn't. Gosh.
But the right coast, I guess.
Omarosa.
Kris Jenner, was it?
No, she.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Okay,
yeah,
who was it?
Faye Resnick.
Oh, okay. Yes. Wow, that's. I remember that name from the OJ trial days.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. All right, Yellow Wedge. What was Martin Luther King Jr.'s birth name? Oh, what a good question.
This
I don't
is
know,
a good
Colin.
One. It was Michael. I am pretty sure.
Michael King Jr.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
All right. Next question. Purple Wedge. The town of Agra in India houses what famous monument to Shah Jahan's wife? Everybody.
The Taj Mahal.
Taj Mahal.
Okay. All right.
Correct. Green Wedge for science. Where in the human body are the two most common areas to check for a pulse?
I was like, where is this question going?
The two most common areas, check for pulse. The wrist and the neck?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. What a weird question.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you stop at any point in that question, it's
right.
weird.
Yeah.
Where is the human body?
Yes.
Okay.
Turns out it's two. The groin and the right nostril.
Yeah.
Why, how do you do it?
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, last question, Orange Wedge. Oh gosh, what a strange card. A race that is longer than 26.2 miles in length is called a what?
A race that is longer than is it
Colin?
Ultra marathon?
Ooh.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
ultra
it is?
Marathon.
All right.
Yeah. Anything over 26.2 is called an ultra.
Oh, really?
Ultra
marathon. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you can run 27.
I guess it literally makes sense, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like when I hear ultra marathon, I think like, you know, 50 miles or 100 miles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, across the United States. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I'm going to run an inframarathon one day. It's gonna be incredible.
That's when you jog alongside one of the runners to hand them a cup of water, right? It's like, yeah, I completed my first inframarathon.
That's it.
All right. Good job, brains.
All right. Well, I mean, we're so excited to bring you the type of episode that I think everybody looks forward to when you're, you know, when you're watching, when you're really into a television show or a trivia podcast. And that is a mid-season clip show.
Yay! Or, I mean, it could be worse. It could be we're stuck in an elevator. Two characters Model stuck episode, in an elevator.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
That's every episode of this show, right? Like, you're stuck in an elevator with like, you know, a bunch of people who won't shut up about trivia. And you're clawing at the doors.
Do you guys want
trivia? Right.
So this week, we've curated our past 200-plus episodes, and we've picked out the spookiest, the ghastliest, the candiest, the funnest,
and importantly, the previously recordedest Halloween trivia we've got.
So enjoy this spooky season, everyone. Stay safe, and let's get into the Halloween spirit.
Time for ghosts to come out to play. Different shapes and sizes on display. Some look worried, some look posh. But the secret ingredient in your coffee is squash.
Now, I have a trivia question for you. You might get this question on your pub quiz, listener at home. You're going to want to know this. If you go to Starbucks coffee and you order a pumpkin spice latte, is there pumpkin in the pumpkin spice latte? Dun, dun, dun.
Right now?
All right.
Yeah, if you go today, October 2016, and you ordered a pumpkin spice latte, and they gave it to you, and you drank it, have you just consumed any pumpkin?
They changed it.
Yeah,
it used to not be. It used to just be spice, and I think all the organic or all the natural hoopla, they had to cut down on artificial flavoring, and I think they did add.
I think the opposite. Like, it did have it, and then they took it away. I mean, they might have natural flavorings.
They did
change
it. They changed it in 2015, but what did they change it to?
I think they took it out. What's the answer?
Let's find out. The answer is Karen is correct. They put it in. It's pumpkin spice latte, the popular fall beverage served at Starbucks for a limited time. Did not have any pumpkin in it. The idea was it was pumpkin spice, the sort of spice that you put in a pumpkin pie. But yes, due to people sort of making some noise online about how there's not even any pumpkin in a pumpkin spice latte.
They were like, okay.
And also that it used caramel coloring, which for good or for ill, had got this reputation of, you know, being bad for you. Starbucks reformulated the drink in 2015, took out the caramel coloring, and put in pumpkin puree.
Okay.
And
how
so it
much
is made,
of it?
There, no, trace. It's the, yeah, that's yeah, no, not trace elements, but like, you know, there is a, they a call pumpkin. It a sauce.
Okay.
Pumpkin sauce.
Okay.
And like that plus your milk plus your coffee is the pumpkin spice.
Have you had one yet?
And that pumpkin
season?
Spice, I have not had one this season. I wonder how the flavor is. I very rarely get these sort of sugar bomb Starbucks stuff. But incredibly popular. So let's talk about pumpkin spice. The pumpkin spice lattes, the pumpkin spice, the pumpkins, all that kind of stuff. So around 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Starbucks looked at the success of seasonal drinks that it had, like the eggnog latte.
That's my favorite.
And the peppermint mocha. Maybe you like this. I don't know.
Good.
And they were like, well, you know, we're having the success with these seasonal drinks in the winter. What if we had a seasonal drink in the fall? The fall is cold.
Yeah.
Oh, those are winter.
Those are winter. Those are holiday.
Yeah.
So they do some focus tests. And they find out that when they kind of focus test a whole lot of different flavors, people liked chocolate. And they liked caramel. And the pumpkin pie flavored coffee.
We were like,
it was not like on the low end, but it was in like the middle.
Okay.
It was like, this is all right.
Yeah.
So Starbucks ended up going with the pumpkin pie because they kind of looked at the market and they were like, you know what? We have this sort of free and open, you know, market
untapped.
On the pumpkin flavored, you know, coffee genre. So let's go ahead and do that. And of course it is, you know, very thematically appropriate to the fall.
Yeah.
And you might wonder, Chris, why is that if you don't live in America?
And a lot of our listeners are international. And I'll tell you, when I start looking up, you know, facts and figures about pumpkin spice latte, a lot of the articles are aimed at people in the UK and Australia who are like, why do Americans
love this stuff?
Go so wacko for pumpkin spice? Why are they putting squash in like their coffee?
Why?
It doesn't make any sense.
It's crazy.
Yep. We'll get to that. Pumpkin is a kind of squash. By the way, they almost called it the fall harvest latte.
No.
No.
It sounds like leaves. Like it's just a bunch of leaves.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. It sounds like leaves in your coffee. Yeah. That's in reference, by the way, Karen, to the way the leaves fall off the trees. So, pumpkin. Yeah, it's a kind of squash. Here's something real interesting. Libby's Pumpkin is a subsidiary of Nestle. They do about 80 to 90% of the canned pumpkin business in America.
Wow.
Which is all, most of it is around this time of year.
Wow.
Because Thanksgiving, pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
If you look at the can, it says, made from Libby's Select Pumpkins.
Okay.
That is not just a little marketing line. They have their own proprietary varietal of pumpkin that they bought. And it is called Libby Select Pumpkins.
Like the strain or like the brand.
Yeah.
Technically, it's a type of Dickinson pumpkin. And the weird part about this is, if you look at Libby Select Pumpkins, they do not look like the orange, round, carving jack-o'-lantern pumpkins.
What do they look like?
So, I'm not going to...
I imagine they look like a water balloon full of pumpkin goop. Like,
you are not very far off.
Yeah.
They are more oblong. They're a little taller. Uh-huh. The skin on them is tan to beige.
Okay.
Now, this has led to an urban myth that started going around this year that, oh, there's no pumpkin in canned pumpkin. It's all squash. It's like, well, pumpkin is squash.
Yeah. But
these are pumpkins. They are bred not to look like jack-o'-lanterns. They are bred to be full of delicious, delicious pumpkin. But again, why, think our foreign listeners, are you guys
Americans
so nuts about pumpkins and you put it in your coffee? This aroma of the spices that they put into pumpkin pie is so fundamental to like American nostalgia. You know, Thanksgiving is a time of going home and being with your family.
Those air fresheners are my mom's jam.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and they have been since before 2003. I know.
Well, pumpkin and that smell of pumpkin spice goes back to the beginning of America. American Cookery by Amelia Simmons, which was written
what
in the 1700s-ish.
Uh-huh.
First known cookbook written by an American, a person living in America. And it basically, if you look at this book that, you know, scholars look at it, it really takes the old British recipes and then it uses the ingredients that are available
like
in America to make, So it's like, oh, this stuff is made with corn and not oats, that sort of thing, maize. It has the first recipe for turkey with cranberries. And she has a recipe in this book for pumpkin pudding, which is basically like pumpkin pie.
And it's
pumpkin that is spiced with ginger and nutmeg and another variety of the recipe, allspice.
The major
spices are cloves, cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, and then possibly allspice.
Yeah.
And so again,
which is its own plant.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's not every spice.
Et cetera spice.
It's technically one spice.
It was in 1934 that the company McCormick, the spice company McCormick, introduced the pumpkin spice blend. It just has all the spices that you need, all the four basic spices all together.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I'd like to close out by saying, now that the pumpkin spice latte has become so popular, pumpkin spice everything is now the current fad trend in America. I went to Target.com and just searched for pumpkin spice.
Interesting.
Here are just some of the products that I found on Target that are available right now to order. This is all, I'm not making any of this up.
Okay.
Any of it.
Uh-huh.
Pumpkin spice Cheerios.
Okay.
That sounds delicious.
Probably.
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice Halloween costume. It's like
you smell like
it's
it,
like
or?
Sexy pumpkin. Pumpkin spice Eggos.
Sure.
Pumpkin spice Greek yogurt. These are all products that are currently purchasable.
It depends on
very
the,
traditional
how pumpkin-y it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, only if there's like granola to make it.
Pumpkin spice Lindor truffles.
Yeah,
probably good.
Pumpkin spice chili seasoning.
Chili.
Oh, I kind of want to have some.
Yeah,
try it.
Pumpkin spice lip balm.
Okay, I have some in my purse right now.
All right.
It's disgusting.
And finally, this sounds like a Chris Kohler joke, but this is actually real. Will Shorts presents Pumpkin Spice Sudoku.
Nice. Okay.
Watching television can rot your brain. Halloween specials can make you go insane. But TV knowledge in trivia is vital. Can you identify the show by their spooky episode title?
So, I love Halloween. I love it. I love the costumes and the candies and the decorations. And I really love the Halloween episodes of TV shows.
Oh!
Everybody always has like a punny name. They go way out of their way. Like, you see their costumes. It's fun.
Yeah.
Like, Halloween is
yeah.
a
And some
big
shows
pop culture
really
event.
Stepped it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll read you the title of the episode and you tell me what show. And there's a clue in the title. Puns or characters from the show.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome.
How about the one with the Halloween party? Everybody.
Friends.
How about Ghost of Clampett Castle?
Oh.
The Beverly Hillbillies.
That's right.
Oh, is that where they lived?
Well, they're Clampett.
The Clampett family.
Oh, okay.
The Curse of the Cramdens.
The honeymoon.
Oh, sorry. Keep saying Chris and you keep answering.
Well,
I thought that was an altogether one.
How about It's the Great Pumpkin, Sam Winchester? Karen?
Supernatural.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh. The Winchester brothers.
Halloween night, but night is spelled with K-N-I-G-H-T. Chris.
I have no idea.
Why'd you buzz?
I thought
he
I was going to figure it out, but says yes.
Knight Rider?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Thinking some medieval show.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was no. like, I can't.
Game of Thrones?
No.
Every episode is a Halloween episode.
Yeah.
How about this? Bungholio, Lord of the Harvest, Lord of the Harvest, aka Butoween. Everybody.
Beavis
and
Butthead.
Yes. How about this? Everybody hates Halloween. Chris.
Sorry,
Karen.
You did it. You can do it.
Everybody hates Chris.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was going to be everybody.
I was going to say everybody loves Raymond.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was a teenage tailor.
Oh, is this Home Improvement?
Yes.
Okay.
They were the Taylor family.
Oh. Yeah, the Taylor. Oh, okay. Nice.
Halloween. Hill-o-ween.
Hill-o-ween.
Colin.
King of the Hill?
Yes. The Ghost of the General Lee. Everybody.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes. It's the Gay Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
It's the Gay Pumpkin.
Karen.
Queer as Folk.
No. Colin.
Will and Grace?
Yes. What is Blue afraid of?
Oh,
it's just Blue's Clues.
Blue's Clues. Steve-el 2. This time he's not alone.
Steve-el?
Steve-el.
Steve-el 2. This time he's not alone.
Jackass?
No.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's like Steve-o.
Yeah.
It is Family Matters.
Urkel.
Steve Urkel.
Oh.
Wow.
Bar Wars 5. The Final Judgment.
Oh,
Chris.
Cheers.
Cheers. Introduction to Statistics. Chris.
Community.
Yes. The Good Guy Fluctuation. Colin.
That must be Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory, yes. Tina and the Real Ghost. Karen.
30 Rock.
No.
Whoa.
Family Ties?
Nope.
Chris. Bob's Burgers?
Bob's Burgers.
Oh.
So many Tinas.
Yeah. Cliff's Mistake.
Cliffs.
The Cosby Show?
Cosby Show.
Oh,
yes.
I was thinking Cheers. Yes. I was like, we already
cheers
had Cheers.
Yeah, Cheers.
Petergeist. Everyone.
Family Guy.
Yes. Employee Transfer. Oh. Karen.
The Office?
The Office.
Oh, good one.
Lord Zedd's Monster Heads.
Lord Zedd.
Karen.
Doctor Who?
No.
Lord Zedd.
I don't know.
A Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh!
Lord Zedd. Korn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery.
Korn?
That is South Park.
South Park.
It's Korn the Band.
And last one. Fonselectomy. Chris.
Happy Days.
Happy Days.
Fonselectomy.
Like Fonzie.
Having a tonsillectomy.
Yeah.
On Halloween.
Maybe he can't eat the candy.
Oh, I thought of another vasectomy, but okay.
Oh, Fonzie's vasectomy.
That's what I was like.
Episode.
I was going to do it
tonight on a very special episode of Happy Days.
Hey.
Hey, I want to impregnate you on Halloween. Oh.
Sit on it. Oh, wait, no.
Please get off.
Cool, good job, you guys.
What's the most frightful thing you'll ever feel? Is it that creature laying eggs at your heel? Or is it an axe murderer giving you a cheese? No, it's your crappy costume mess digging into your face.
If you guys are like me, you had your share of bad Halloween costumes as a kid. In some years I was like lucky enough to have a grown-up help me, you know, and I would have like a really awesome, I was an awesome vampire one year.
Oh, yeah.
My mom spent a lot of time, I had this cool cape, and we got the makeup and the teeth. And there were other years, though, years where it was more like when I had my E.T. costume. Mm-hmm. So this was a store-bought, off-the-shelf E.T. costume.
So that you're okay. E.T., you're not Elliot. Yep.
I was E.T.,
like
right?
A hospital gown plastic
this is
kind
like
of thing that wrapped around you.
1982. Yeah. And as a way of introducing the rest of the story, I would like to play for you a short clip from The Simpsons, a Treehouse of Horror episode.
Check it out, Lisa. I'm Radioactive Man.
I don't think the real Radioactive Man wears a plastic smock with a picture of himself on it.
He would on Halloween.
Yes.
Oh,
so wait, your E.T. costume is E.T.
Oh, yeah.
On a shirt?
It was
a,
it was a shirt.
The writers had exactly the same experience I did. Yep. Yes, it was the mask was decent enough. It was a decent enough mask of E.T. It looked like E.T.'s face. But the rest of the costume was essentially, it was an apron with a picture of E.T. on it. And, you know, even as like a little kid, I felt like I was getting ripped off. I'm like, I'm not dressing up as E.T. This is more like I'm a walking tribute to E.T.
Right.
You know? I'm an E.T. fan.
Yeah. And the masks, again, if you know what I'm talking about, these were the most uncomfortable. They had the tiniest, tiniest little eye slits.
Yeah. They're made out of plastic that you would ordinarily use in that configuration for a picnic knife. the edges of it would
they're
just
sharp.
Cut you up.
They were sharp. And they had these weird little nose slits as well.
Slits so basically everybody, if you're dressed up as He-Man, you look like E.T. If you were dressed up as Barbie, you look like E.T. Because you had these like Voldemort snake nose slit things in the mask. The piece of, not even just the, like a proper like strap, but a piece of rubber band
that
was stapled to the plastic.
The staples by your face. I totally see why your smock had a picture of E.T. Like I was Smurfette and so it looked like a dress. It didn't have a picture of Smurf, but E.T.'s naked, so it would look like a little kid, like that's dressed in a naked costume, which is weird.
Right,
I did want to look like E.T.
Yeah.
And oh, who are you dressed as, little boy? I'm a shrine to E.T. I'm a collection of some impressions. Yeah, right. I'm an homage.
Yeah. I am the zeitgeist. I am the feeling of the culture of 1982.
Yeah, I'm a pastiche of E.T.-related moments.
I wish she said that.
If you're like me, if you were a child of the 70s or 80s and even into the early 90s, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This is like the decent to crappy decent mask and then the picture of the character on the smock.
Yep. Yeah.
All of these costumes were made by one company.
Whoa.
All of these costumes.
Whoa. Wait, these
mask with the smock type costume were all made by the Ben Cooper Costume Company.
Man.
And the Ben Cooper name was for decades the name in costumes.
Right.
And this is the story of a man who just saw an awesome opportunity. The company's a lot older than I thought. I mean, they peaked, I think, in the 70s, 80s for sure, but they went back to the 30s. So Ben Cooper himself is from New York, and he had a fairly regular start in professional costuming for like showbiz. He ended up making costumes for chorus girls, and he would outfit places like the Cotton Club, or he had a contract with the Ziegfeld Follies at one point.
Oh, wow. So he really, it's not, he's just a businessman.
Yeah.
And a grand idea he actually is in the trade.
That's right. That's right. And this was, you know, starting out in the 1920s, and trick-or-treating as like a phenomenon, especially in America, really didn't start in earnest until like right around World War II and thereafter. But in the 1930s, Ben Cooper saw this was starting to become really popular. He noticed that there was an opportunity here for costumes for kids to go door to door. And specifically, all the stories I read about Ben Cooper, they all make the point of what made him so savvy was he recognized the opportunity for licensed costumes.
Mm. Sure.
Because anyone can make a ghost, anyone can make a vampire or a werewolf. Mm. So this is, you know, this is the 30s.
If he licensed it, that is very early.
That's
very,
right.
Very, very early in terms of licensed merchandise.
1937.
Mm-hmm. What was the first
license? He obtained the rights to, would you guys care to guess? What would have been a big costume for 1937?
No.
Disney? Mickey Mouse?
Is it Mickey Mouse?
He obtained the rights to Walt Disney characters and his Snow White costume.
Oh, sure.
Sold like anything that sells a lot. And he kept this on. Anytime there was something that he thought that could be licensed as a character, he was all over it. Like well into the 40s, into the 50s.
Wow.
And as trick-or-treating, it was kind of this like feedback. Like a lot of people give him credit for helping make trick-or-treating a thing, because now kids could latch onto their favorite pop culture character. He sold tons of Superman costumes. He sold tons of Davy Crockett costumes. And it should be pointed out that for a lot of the time, he didn't have any real competition. As far back as the 50s, the Ben Cooper Company had made a generic kind of horror-y costume that they called the Spider-Man costume.
This was in the
50s.
Okay.
A spidery man.
Right.
Sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yes. So in the early 1960s, he got wind that Marvel Comics had created this new character called, of course, Spider-Man, and it was very popular. And they approached Marvel. So Ben Cooper was kind of like, partly I want to avoid a lawsuit, and partly I sense another great marketing idea.
his marketing sense was tingling.
This was Marvel Comics' first merchandising deal.
Oh,
wow.
Their first merchandising deal was for Ben Cooper to make costumes of specifically Spider-Man and then also Incredible Hulk. And this one, the Spider-Man smock actually made an attempt to look like the Spider-Man costume.
Yeah.
I will give them credit. It wasn't quite as conceptual as some of the other ones. On into the 70s, he got the license for Star Wars. And so I remember a lot of these in particular growing up is the smock of like the face within the picture on the smock. Like there's a Yoda. There's a really bad Yoda costume from the 80s where it's a decent enough Yoda mask, but then the body of the costume is all green with a picture of Yoda's face. And then the Empire Strikes Back logo. Again, I know Yoda has a weird body, but it strikes me as supremely half-assed.
Yeah.
My favorite bad one that I found, though, was of the Fonz when Happy Days was big. I want to show you guys a picture of this one just because to describe it won't do it justice.
That's the Yoda one? Oh, my God.
That's so scary.
Ding dong, I'm Yoda. With a picture of myself on my shirt.
We all know why.
Wow, Yoda's quite the narcissist. The Fonz costume was a Fonzie mask and then a smock with a picture of the Fonz saying, hey, the Fonz.
In case you really,
at this point, still didn't know who you were looking at, the Fonz is wearing a pin on his jacket that says Happy Days.
His thumbs up.
It's like the masks themselves were so low detail that, I mean, Yoda, you could probably figure out what Yoda is, but the Fonz mask, I mean, that looks like, could be anybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to have the smock with the picture of the Fonz to let people know that you are the Fonz.
It's funny you mentioned the Richard Nixon mask, Karen. Like, when they started making presidential masks, those became another huge seller for them. Like, the bank robber, that is a Ben Cooper mask. That classic bank robber Richard Nixon mask, that was originally a Ben Cooper mask. Yeah. Sadly.
Yeah, what happened to it?
So sadly, you know, partly what happened was competition. You know, it was only so long but before other companies started realizing, you know, there's a lot of money to be made here in costumes. And particularly where Ben Cooper started to feel the pressure was on the high end was there were a lot of companies making these elaborate, molded, you know, latex, really high quality masks. In the 90s, they declared bankruptcy and they got bought by Rubies, which is now sort of the big name in and they make adult costumes. They make kids costumes. They bought out stuff. What I've ordered stuff from Rubies as well for my Star Wars related costuming. they bought out what was left.
But that's not for Halloween.
Yeah.
That's for every day.
Yeah. I decided I wanted to see a naked Yoda. And well, no, I've said too much. I've said too much.
Did they ever show Yoda like topless? No, he's always in a robe. No, I'm serious.
Okay, no, I don't think so. Okay.
I don't think they ever showed him topless. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. Take this seriously.
I forgot he wears a robe. No. Like in my mind.
Yeah, that's
he's
all
naked
him.
Like E.T. Yeah. In my mind.
Just wrinkly and green.
And fuzzy, green and furry.
Yeah.
So if you have fond or not fond memories of these crappy smock costumes like myself and Milhouse, thank Ben Cooper.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Humble beetles scurrying on their feet. But beware if you see them on the street. These creepy crawlies have an appetite for meat.
Do you guys know what spontaneous generation is?
I don't know. Is that like when you cut a worm in half and both halves grow back?
close, kind of. It's a theory. According to this theory, living things come forth from non-living things.
Okay.
It's a very old school way of thinking.
Like maggots come from meat.
Exactly. Right. The theory is that, you know, there are different elements in the world. There's air, there's water, and through different combinations of that, life can be generated. It's funny to sit here and be like, wow, they're really dumb. But this is like centuries and centuries of people without the right technology or tools to find out about cells.
They were putting forth a theory, mm-hmm. and their observations held up that theory as mm-hmm. best as they could.
From the days of Aristotle, you know, spontaneous generation is discussed as a fact in literature well into the Renaissance. Even Shakespeare, snakes and crocodiles and other creepy crawlies forming from the mud. Mm. And it kind of made sense because the observation is, oh, well, all these crocodiles are living in the river, hanging out in the mud. They must therefore come from mud. In 1668, Italian physician Francesco Redi disproved the theory of spontaneous generation. And what he did was pretty basic. Popular claim or the popular example is, yes, there's meat and maggots come out from the meat. And so what he did was he had samples of rotting meat that some were fully exposed to the air, mm-hmm. Some were partially exposed, and some of the meat was not exposed to air at all, like in a container of some sort. Obviously, the meat that was exposed to air had maggots and flies, and the meat that was enclosed did not. This discovery completely changed the way people viewed decomposition of organisms. He didn't know it at the time, but Francesco Redi really is the founding father of what we call forensic entomology. Mm. Huh. Forensic entomology is application and study of insects and other bugs and arthropods to criminal mm-hmm. and legal matters. thanks to his maggot meat experiment. And now it is a scientific way for experts to determine the time of death of bodies and crimes.
We've seen it on the TV cop shows, you know. It's like, well, based on the level of maggots and decomposition, time of death was 18 hours ago or whatever.
And the concept of forensic entomology kind of dates back a while ago, but it was within the last 30 years that it has become a certified kind of a system to explore feasible sources for evidence in investigations and whatnot, just from bugs. There's a certain type of beetle, and they're flesh-eating beetles. Forensic labs would use these bugs to help them clean skeletons.
Oh, yeah, right, right. I've heard about this.
On Bones. I've seen that on Bones. I've seen it on the TV show Bones.
Oh, really?
And it happens on Bones. But
they can eat all the meat, all the hide, all the skin, and leave a pristine skeleton. And this is actually really helpful because the other way, the old way, is they would use a lot of harsh chemicals.
Right.
The Natural History Museum in London, a while ago, they had a flesh-eating bug cam. But the thing is, you have to keep them enclosed because if
Because they eat flesh.
Yes, they eat flesh. They eat organic material. They're also known as bow bugs, because it's a problem for violinists, because they like to eat the bow because it's made out of horsehair, and so they would infest,
and it would just degrade and snap. Mm-hmm.
Eat all those strings.
There you go.
Even the best kind of sweets can make the spirits halt. Turns out what makes candy good is not salt.
So I went to Sweden a few weeks ago. So I brought back a taste of Sweden for you guys. I'm not going to tell you what the flavors are.
Okay, all right, okay.
It will be kind of a blind taste test, except you can see the candy. It's okay for you to look at it.
Okay.
You just taste it. You tell me what you think it is, and then I'll tell you.
All right.
I'll
confirm. We can look and we can taste, but we can't know. We must simply
I won't
guess.
Tell you.
Right.
I've been trying to practice my Swedish pronunciation of these.
I bet it's better than ours.
Well, it still might not be right, so sorry for the Swedish listeners for laughing at your candy and also for mispronouncing.
We're not laughing at your candy. We're laughing with your candy.
We're laughing because it's not... Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
The first one is called Salta Meissnex.
Yeah.
Salty Meissnex?
Salty Meissnex. Delicious salty Meissnex.
Well, they look like those Ritter bars.
It looked like chocolate.
Yeah.
This looks like we're getting off to an easy start here.
Yeah, I'm starting you guys gently. I'm gently easing you into the experience.
Okay, so it's chocolate, crunchy things. Yeah, crunchy things inside. They're the size of nuts, but they're not nuts. It tastes corny.
It does. It almost has like a corn nut.
It's a familiar flavor to sure. So it's basically, it's a bar of chocolate with...
Are they peas or is it corn?
I can't identify what it is.
I vote corn.
I vote corn.
It's corn nuts.
Mm.
They're salted corn.
That's good.
Chocolate bar. This one is called Turkish pepper. I'm not pronouncing it correctly. It's actually made in Finland, but it's super common in Sweden and in Denmark. And if you bite into it, I'm told.
Whoa. Wow. Oh my!
I'm scared.
Oh. Do it. Just bite into it. Oh!
All right. So licorice on the outside for sure.
It's
like a burst of salt.
Yeah.
It's like salt.
Is it also hot?
Oh, maybe some pepper.
It's so salty.
It's like salt and pepper wrapped in licorice.
Usually, when there's like salt in your mouth. It goes away after a while, but it just keeps building and building.
It's a tsunami of salt.
A salt grenade.
It is. I think I have now fired all of these salt receptors off my tongue. That's bracing.
Oh, God, my toes are curling.
Wow.
I did not enjoy that.
So my friend was like, oh, no, they're really interesting when you bite into them. But I'll be honest with you, I couldn't make it to the bite into it part of that candy. I was like, oh, no, I'm taking it.
So you have not had the experience?
It was in my mouth for a while. And I was like, nope.
Nope.
You foisted this on us.
I have a palate cleanser for you guys, though.
Yeah, that was a palate cleanser in the sense
everything's wiped
Batman
out.
And Little Boy were household cleaners. Yes.
It's like, you know, when you burn your tongue and your taste buds are kind of numb.
Yeah,
it feels like that.
My whole mouth is just like void of sensation.
Okay, this is Bilar.
Bilar?
Did you say what are they? Bugar?
Bilar.
What are they shaped like? They're shaped like little animals?
Sharks.
Or little...
Are they Swedish
fish?
Or
like cars? They're either cars or sharks.
Oh, are they Swedish fish?
They're in pastel colors. No, they probably taste like... burning. Bilar is Swedish for...
I think it's a little race car.
They're a little race car.
Yeah. Bilar is Swedish for car.
I have one of each color.
So it kind of looks like someone took normal marshmallows and squish them into little cars.
It does.
Like someone made these.
Yeah. Wow, that's remarkably resilient.
You squish down on it, it returns to its original shape.
Yeah.
They call these Sweden's most purchased car, because Bilar means car in Swedish.
This is Sweden's most tasteless candy.
It's because we don't have taste buds.
Yeah. They're actually quite savory if you haven't just eaten the salt grenade. It feels like it's in the same family as like circus peanuts. It's like like a marshmallow.
You know those rings, gummy rings? Sometimes they have a white underside, like they're two sided.
Yeah.
It tastes like the white part.
It does.
Yes.
You're right.
Yes, it totally does. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So this is the last candy. It's been described as like, oh, you have to try this. This is the classic Swedish candy. Everybody's had it. It's really old type of candy.
Old.
It's called Ljungarvrål, which means jungle roar.
You know what I'm scared by is the fact that it's so small.
I'm scared that it's the color black because it always means licorice.
This looks like a poisonous fish. You know what I mean? Like on like the Nature Channel, they're like, its markings indicate its deadliness.
Yeah, it's black with white stripes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're little squirrels.
Maybe monkeys. The package has a monkey.
Oh, you know what? Like, yeah, it's like a monkey profile and it's covered in sugar.
Oh my... Wow, that packs a punch. So
you can take it out. Just put it in for a moment.
Salty.
Tastes like Play-Doh.
Yes. Oh man.
With once you get past the coating, once you get past the coating of table salt on this thing,
yeah, I thought it was sugar.
It is at least just it is at least just a piece of sticky licorice.
Now it's fine.
This thing has now taken the shape of one of my molars and will be there forever.
After the initial salt wears off, it's actually kind of tasty.
No,
that's my least favorite out of all of them. For
oh
sure.
God,
no, I don't know that.
That is, oh god, yeah, that whatever, what is that one called?
The Turkish pepper?
The Turkish pepper?
Yeah, pepper.
Pepper? Turkish pepper is what batteries taste like.
Well, there you go.
Can I have some more corn nuts chocolate?
Yeah, you started out with the most delicious thing.
Oh, things started out
this
so
good.
This
is going to be a great segment. These are awesome.
Wow. It's trick candy.
No, they eat it sincerely. Their eyes don't even tear up when they're eating it. Like, they build up some kind of immunity.
Unlike you babies.
Yeah.
I mean, we're wusses. We're total wusses.
We're used to a different flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
We're just used to crap load of sugar.
Sugar.
Anyway, there you guys go.
All right.
Good job.
A death by bullet, by jeep, by an unfortunate fall. Death by orc getting pushed off a wall. A shriek so sharp, so famous in the movie realm, can only be the painful scream that of Mr. Wilhelm.
I would like to begin this next segment by playing a very short clip for you guys from the movie The Charge at Feather River from 1953.
Oh.
It's a Western.
Okay.
Wilhelm!
Yeah, I'll just fill my pipe.
I know that guy. It's Wilhelm.
You do know that guy, Chris, and his name is Wilhelm. Mm. And these days, although this movie is largely unknown, it is famous for giving a name to perhaps the most famous sound effect in Hollywood history. And I believe Chris knows what this is. Chris?
The Wilhelm scream.
Yes, yeah. The Wilhelm scream. And what the Wilhelm scream is, was, shall be, is a stock sound effect of the man screaming. This was not uncommon, especially in the 1950s and 60s, of if you had a particular sound effect, it would show up again and again and again, particularly within one given studio's movies.
Oh, like a library.
Like, exactly. They would create a library of here's, you know, arrow being shot, here's sword clash, you know. Yeah. So as you know, as a movie maker or sound engineer, you don't need to recreate these sounds every single time. And this particular scream has become one of the most, if not the most, used stock sound effect ever.
Appeared in this movie.
So let's back up. Let's back up a couple years. It was first used in a movie called Distant Drums from 1951. It was a Gary Cooper movie, and it was basically about explorers, you know, in and around the Everglades and their interactions with the Native American tribes. Safe to say, not a terribly politically correct movie today's standards. But one of the scenes in Distant Drums featured a man getting attacked by an alligator as they're going through the Everglades. And they recorded originally for that movie several samples of a guy screaming that then they would lay in afterward. And that was the source of the original scream. So, but it didn't take its name until, as I played for you just now, The Charge at Feather River, where Wilhelm! And then he gets shot in the leg. And so, as I say, you know, this went into a library of sound effect vault kind of thing, and you'd use it when needed. And it was actually featured in, you know, some big name movies into the 50s and 60s. It was in A Star Is Born. Mm-hmm. It was in PT-109. So why is this a big deal? This was a big deal because this sound effect was reintroduced to the world in a small movie you may have heard of called Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
Ben Burtt, who was the sound designer on Star Wars, as well as a number of other George Lucas movies, he found this clip on a reel, basically, as he was creating all the sound effects for Star Wars. And he found it labeled, man being eaten by alligator.
Yeah.
And no. I think, you know, yeah, you're going to need
just
that.
Just in case.
And partly out of his need for a sound of someone falling, and I think partly out of his just sort of mischievous streak, he decided to put it into Star Wars. So let me play you the clip where it appears in Star Wars.
I'm trying to guess where it is.
This is when Luke and Leia are escaping across the chasm and the stormtroopers on the other side.
Okay.
It's one of those sound effects where once you hear it, it just jumps out at you. Yeah. So from there, really, this is just, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. It kind of exploded.
Well, Star Wars was sort of an influential film
on
many young directors.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it, in some ways, I guess it kind of became like an in-joke almost, is the way to put it.
Right.
Yeah, in-joke slash homage slash like Easter egg for other people in the industry. You know, that as a sound designer, you'd find a way to sneak the Wilhelm scream into your movie just so that everyone else who's in the know can be like, oh, hey, Wilhelm scream, and kind of, you know, nudge their date.
Yeah, you're so cool.
You know the joke, apparently.
Stop talking during the movie.
George Lucas uses this a lot. Steven Spielberg has used it a lot.
Huh.
Quentin Tarantino, when he was first introduced to the Wilhelm scream, kind of just fell in love with it. He has used it. Peter Jackson has used it as well. And it's kind of become, you know, and all of these people that I just named, they're film nerd directors. You know what I mean? Yeah. They all really kind of like, I think, tying themselves to this rich history of the Wilhelm scream. I don't have the time here to list all of the movies that this sample has been used in, but I will give you
just a
sampling of some of the greatest hits of movies wherein you can find the Wilhelm scream. In no particular order, Despicable Me, Inglourious Basterds, Reservoir Dogs, Kung Fu Panda, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin, Raiders of the Lost Ark, as I mentioned, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And this one, I think, merits special note because it's actually used as the sound of one of Mola Ram's thugs being eaten by an alligator.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a wink-wink inside of a wink-wink.
Wow.
Toy Story, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and the Two Towers, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, Pirates of the Caribbean, Transformers, Up, Titanic, and every single one of the Star Wars movies.
Wow.
So again, we have Star Wars to thank for many things, and perpetuating the Wilhelm scream is one of them. Wilhelm scream.
What about the guy who screamed?
The guy who screamed, Karen, I'm so glad you asked. Ben Burtt himself did a little bit of research into this, and a couple other magazines and film writers have dug into this. By all accounts, it seems that the man who created the original scream was Sheb Woolley, who you may not know the name right away. He was a famous voice actor, and he did some novelty songs. His most famous hit was The Purple People Eater.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
So Sheb Woolley, a Purple People Eater, also gave us the Wilhelm scream. Here it is. Here it features in Batman Returns. This is this is Batman tossing a thug off the roof.
Okay.
It's so dramatic. Yeah. It's so dramatic.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
A banquet hall approaches out of the blue. A scary feast of roast goblets and stew. But do you eat the dishes? Or do the dishes eat you?
Okay, so I have a quiz. It's mostly about horror and food and how they overlap.
All right.
Okay.
Going to some dark corners here. I like it.
But there's some whimsical stuff.
Okay.
Barnyard buzzers, please buzz in with the answer. What 1978 comedy horror movie spawned 3 sequels, 2 video games, and an animated TV series and features a song Puberty Love?
1978 comedy horror.
And it has to do with food.
Oh, it has to do with food.
Or
Colin. I got it.
Oh, go ahead.
Chris. Is it Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
I've never watched it. What made them killer? Is it like some radioactive...
There was somebody, some weird scientist. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Don't look too closely at... Because at the end of that movie, the carrots strike back after they control the tomato. Like,
oh my God.
I mean...
Wow.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, yes. Okay. What short story by Stephen King about a monster called He Who Walks Behind the Rose was the seed for 8 feature films?
Whoa.
Colin. Was that Children of the Corn?
Children of the Corn. A short story and... There were 8 Children of the Corn.
Man, I knew they made like 3 or 4. I didn't know there were 8 of them.
Man, Stephen King is making some bank off of doing nothing.
Some good ideas. Okay. What 1966 Charlton Heston movie was based on the novel Make Room, Make Room about overpopulation of the Earth? Everybody.
Soylent Green.
What 2006 zombie comedy musical is about zombie chickens? And... You know what? I'm gonna leave it there because it's a pun. The name is a pun, and I know you guys can get there.
Zombie chickens
and meat and monsters. That's all I'm gonna say about it.
Yeah, poultrygeist.
Poultrygeist.
Oh
poultrygeist.
My God.
Yeah. Man. It was like
team effort.
We're so good.
Team effort. Yeah. Poultrygeist.
Yeah. Poultrygeist. Night of the Chicken Dead. That's the name of the movie. What's the name of the titular yogurt-like white substance people eat in the 1985 horror comedy with the tagline, "Are you eating it or is it eating you?"
Whoa.
1985.
They're eating a white yogurt-like.
Yogurt.
Creamy.
Go-gurt.
Are the animals. You eating it or is it eating you?
I don't know. It's probably eating like them.
The
though.
Goo?
The dip.
You're close.
The ooze.
The stuff.
The stuff.
Oh, like Oreo stuff.
You're probably right.
It's white, it's goo.
The stuff.
The stuff.
All right, so I'd say 2 scary, to me, children's movies are like a little bit disturbing. In Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, who becomes a giant blueberry after eating gum that doubles as everybody?
Violet Beauregard.
Another Roald Dahl book. James and the Giant Peach.
Yes.
James goes on an adventure inside a giant peach that's inhabited by a variety of large talking invertebrates. Name three of them. There Whoa. Are...
Oh, I see.
A number of them, like seven or eight. Well, yeah.
Do we want to go?
Like a yeah. worm?
A worm, yes.
Miss Spider?
Yes.
Was it, a centipede or a millipede?
Yeah.
Centipede?
Okay.
A maggot?
Nay. No, no.
Grasshopper?
Yes, grasshopper.
Because he plays violin.
Right. Yes. Ladybug?
Yeah, ladybug.
An ant?
No, no ants.
Man, I suck.
Spider. Yeah, the earthworm is like blind. Glowworm.
Glowworm,
yes.
Yes.
Ah. That's how they light up.
A silkworm.
Oh, sure.
Good job, you guys.
The execution is in sight, so you should not stir. Bow down to the royalty of disgust and gall. Is this a ballad or a story that makes your skin crawl?
I have a quiz concept that I think it's going to be better than Brad Pitt or lasers. I think it's going to have more longevity. I think people are really going to love this one.
Throwing down some gauntlets.
We can get a lot of juice out of this. I've written down the name on a piece of paper, and I want you all to say it with enthusiasm when I show you. Here is the name of the quiz you're all about to take.
Carol or Steven.
That's right. It's the game show where you guess whether I'm about to give you the title of a song by singer-songwriter Carol King or the title of a short story by master of the macabre Stephen King.
Oh, I get it.
All right. So, yes, you're going to write down either Carol or Steven in response to these questions. I will give you the title, and you will tell me which King... All right. Penned it. Question one. The Snow Queen. The Snow Queen. Is this a song by singer-songwriter Carole King? Or is this a short story by Stephen King? Carol or Stephen? The Snow Queen. Dana says Stephen. Colin says Stephen. And Karen says Carol. It is a song by Carole King. 1 point on the board for Karen. Dolan's Cadillac. Dolan's Cadillac. is it a story?
Wow,
is it a
good.
Is it a story about
that's...
a car that kills people, or is it a car that you know she
just
used to drive when she
American
was a teenager?
Cadillac.
Exactly. Dolan's Cadillac. Carol or Steven? Carol or Steven? Carol or Steven? Dana says Steven. Colin says Steven. Karen says Steven. It is a short story by Stephen King, in which a guy is buried alive. In his Cadillac.
Yikes.
Oh, I think
Yikes.
I read that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, Yikes. That sounds familiar now.
Main Street Saturday Night. Main Street Saturday Night. Is it a song by Carole King or a short story by Stephen King? Main Street Saturday Night. Karen says Carol. Colin says Carol. Dana says Carol. Yes, it is a song by Carole King.
I can imagine it as a Stephen King story.
But they're tougher than you think they are, aren't they? Exactly. Well, you hear it, and it's like, it can be anything.
And as always, our natural tendency to psych ourselves out.
Of course. Well, here's one for you. My Pretty Pony. My Pretty Pony. Does the pony... murder people? Yeah.
Is it a possessed pony?
Right. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Is it or is it just a pony?
Or is it a bittersweet pop
King
ballad?
Likes to ride around the,
a lost
around
childhood
the
innocence.
Mountains of we got Dana says Carol, Colin says Carol, and Karen says Carol. My Pretty Pony is a short story by Stephen King.
About what?
It is about time. It's a very short. Yeah, it's not about murder or anything. Uncle Otto's truck. Uncle Otto's Truck.
Man.
Is it a song by Carole King?
Jeez.
Or one of Stephen King's, as it turns out, many, many short stories.
About automobiles.
About a truck that kills people. He keeps going back to that theme, but is this one of them? Is this one of them, or is it just about Carole King's Uncle Otto? Dana says Stephen, Colin says Carol, and Karen says Carol. It is a short story by Stephen King about a truck that comes to life and kills people. Yeah. Points on the board for Dana.
he got hit by a man. I feel like that would be a pivotal, seminal part of your life.
Right.
Relationship.
In case
with
you're
cars.
Keeping track, Colin has 2 points. Dana and Karen tied for first with 3 points each. The Hard Rock Cafe. The Hard Rock Cafe. Could be either Karen is locked in, Colin is still thinking about it, Dana is locked in. Colin says Stephen, Dana says Carol, and Karen says Carol. It is a song by Carole King.
It was Hard Rock Cafe named after?
No. I think she actually wrote it for, like, the Hard Rock.
Makes
Cafe.
Sense. Yes. Makes
really?
Sense.
Yep.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Okay. Smackwater Jack. Smackwater Jack. A song, a folk hero song, or a man who rises out of the swamp and murders people. Okay, Colin says Stephen. Dana says Stephen, and Karen says Stephen. Smackwater Jack is a person who murders a bunch of people.
in a
song by Carole King.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
So we all got
so
it
we
wrong.
All got it, we wrong. Got it wrong. Yep. Okay. The Man Who Loved Flowers. The Man Who Loved Flowers. Is it a touching ballad by Miss Carole King about a man who
shows his vulnerability?
Shows his vulnerability, exactly, and his love for botany, or a story about a truck that kills people? It is. Right. Karen says Stephen. Colin says Stephen, and Dana says Stephen. It is a Stephen King short story
song.
About a man who is
Stephen King
song.
Stephen King song, right?
Co-written by Ken. No, it's Stephen King short story. You all get 1 point. Congratulations. Right. It is about a man who loves flowers and murders women who wear flowers. And finally, one last one. You know they got a hell of a band. You know they got a hell of a band. Okay, so, Karen says Carol. Colin says Carol. And Dana says Stephen. It is a Stephen King short story about a couple driving through the woods who find themselves in a town where all the dead musicians of the 50s and 60s live and force the people of the town to watch concerts that go on for years, and it is basically heck for them. It is not so good. It is not one of his most beloved short stories. Who got that right? Dana got that right.
Yeah.
Thus, with 6 points,
under
Dana
the wire,
rocks the whole place and wins.
Wow.
Carol or Stephen.
Wow.
Yep.
I like the Carole King song about the killer. That was good. That was good. Yeah, just spiritually on point for both. Yeah.
The list of Stephen King short stories and the list of Carole King songs, they're so prolific that I was hoping that
there'd
there would be a both.
Yeah.
And then I could throw in the both as a, you know, total game changer. Yeah. There was none.
Yeah.
And so, foolish mortals, that's the end of our ride. I want to give a special thanks to the Uber Duck open source voice AI community in Perfect Picture 88 for the lovely Haunted Mansion ghost host voice model that I used to make those segment intros. Hope all you Disney fans enjoyed that. And thank you, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned stuff about costumes, candy, bugs, horror, took a trip down memory lane, and don't forget to pumpkin spice everything. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps. And on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like Who Did What Now?, All Creatures, and The Accidental Creative. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Spend less time staying in the know about all things gaming and more time actually watching and playing what you want with the IGN Daily Update podcast. All you need is a few minutes to hear the latest from IGN on the world of video games, movies, and television with news, previews, and reviews. So listen and subscribe to the IGN Daily Update wherever you get your podcasts. That's the IGN Daily Update wherever you get your podcasts.